From Pacifica Network, this is Democracy Now!
Initial reports indicate that the coalition force operating near the hotel took fire from the lobby of the hotel and returned fire.
The only thing that I never imagined was that American troops were going to attack journalists living in a place protected by international law.
We knew that it was a hotel where journalists were located and others, and it is for that reason it was not attacked during any phase of the aerial campaign.
I think war is a dangerous place.
According to the code of military justice, orders to attack civilians or journalists are civilians, can be disobeyed.
2 years ago, the U.S. military opened fire on the Palestine Hotel in Iraq, killing two cameramen. The brother of one of them has come to the United States to call for an independent investigation. He joins us in our studio, along with another Spanish journalist who survived the attack. We'll also air an excerpt of the documentary Hotel Palestine, Killing the Witness. All that and more coming up. Welcome to Democracy Now!, democracynow.org, the War and Peace Report. I'm Amy Goodman. For the second day in a row, a federal court has refused to order the reinsertion of Terry Schiavo's feeding tube. The 11th Circuit Court of Appeals in Georgia earlier today said in a 2-1 ruling, quote, "There is no denying the absolute tragedy that has befallen Mrs. Schiavo. We all have our own family, our own loved ones, and our own children. However, we are called upon to make a collective objective decision concerning a question of law." Schiavo is the severely brain-damaged woman in Florida who's become the center of an intense family and national debate. Her husband and parents disagreed on whether she should be kept alive by artificial means. Schiavo's mother spoke to the media Tuesday after the first federal court rejected their petition.
"I'm begging you, don't let my daughter die of thirst." No.
The parents have announced they will appeal this morning's court ruling, possibly to the Supreme Court. Lawmakers in Florida are also considering passing special legislation that would make it illegal for doctors to remove feeding tubes in cases where family members disagree on how to care for the patient. In Minnesota, police officials say they believe Monday's school shootings at the Red Lake Native American Reservation were carried out by a single student acting alone. Police say 17-year-old Jeff Weiss first shot dead his grandfather, who was a police officer, and his grandfather's companion. He then took his grandfather's squad car and guns to the local school where he shot dead seven people. On Tuesday, FBI agent Michael Tabman described what happened inside the school.
"Mr. Weiss continued to pursue them into the classroom. It is there that he opened fire, killing a number of students and the teacher."
Police say Weiss had once posted messages on a neo-Nazi website where he professed his admiration for Adolf Hitler. At the Pentagon, military planners have announced they will begin using Predator drones primarily to carry out what's known as hunter-killer missions. Until now, the unpiloted aircraft has been used mostly for intelligence gathering and surveillance. This according to a report in the Washington Post. The next generation of Predators will be armed with as many as 3,000 pounds of precision-guided bombs or missiles. The unpiloted drones can stay afloat for 30 hours and fly at 50,000 feet. This will allow the military to strike quickly almost anywhere in the world without risking the lives of U.S. military personnel. Meanwhile, members of the Special Forces Unit, Navy SEALs, have sued the Associated Press for publishing photographs showing Navy SEALs abusing Iraqi detainees. One photo shows servicemen in Iraq sitting on hooded and handcuffed detainees. One detainee had a gun to his head. Others appeared to be covered in blood. The Navy SEALs have asked a federal court to bar the AP from distributing the photos anymore, claiming the news agency has violated copyright and privacy law. The suit claims the publication of the abuse photos has endangered the lives of the Navy SEALs. a coalition of liberal civil rights advocates, conservative libertarians, and gun rights supporters and medical privacy advocates have joined forces to call on the government to overturn portions of the USA Patriot Act. Former Republican Congressmember Bob Barr says keeping the law intact would do, quote, great and irreparable harm to the Constitution. The group, called the Patriots to Restore Checks and Balances, aims to overturn provisions of the law that allow government agents to carry out secret searches and to demand records from libraries, bookstores, and medical offices. This is Democracy Now!, the War and Peace Report. I'm Amy Goodman. 2 years after the invasion of Iraq, we're also approaching the second anniversary of the U.S. military shelling of the Palestine Hotel. When people in this country think about images of war, they probably remember the iconic moment of the U.S. military tearing down the statue of Saddam Hussein in Firdaus Square on April 9, 2003. What is not remembered as much is what happened the day before, April 8, when the U.S. military opened fire on the Palestine Hotel, just across from that square, killing two journalists, Taras Prastyuk, a Reuters cameraman from the Ukraine, and Jose Coso from the Spanish TV network Telecinco. Several others were seriously wounded in the attack. This week, the brother of Jose Coso, Javier, has come to the United States to call for an independent investigation into the death of his brother and the prosecution of those responsible. Today, we spend the hour with Javier Coso, his translator, and Olga Rodriguez. They came to our studio yesterday. Olga is a correspondent for SER, one of the leading radio stations in Spain. She was two floors above Jose in the Palestine Hotel. And on that morning of April 8, 2003, was literally saved by the bell. I asked her to tell us about that day.
Well, I woke up at early in the morning, and it was a day in which we knew that American troops were in front of our hotel, because already we saw for the first time those troops like 36 hours before the attack against Palestine Hotel. It was the day before the attack. The day before, it was 7th of April, we were in the balcony. We were living in that hotel approximately 200 journalists, Europeans, American journalists. And that day before the attack, we said even hello to the troops. They were in the other side of the river, Tigris River, and they were there looking around as military people. They were trying to know what which buildings were surrounding them. And that was the day before. The 8th of April, we woke up early in the morning and we saw some tanks already on the bridge. They were not hiding. They were there. When the attack happened, I saw them the first time like 4 hours before the attack on the bridge. And I was in the 16th floor of Palestine Hotel. And I was waiting for a phone call from a radio station in Spain because I had to be on the air. And I was in the balcony. Suddenly, my phone rang, so I went inside the room. And when I was doing that, the attack came. At first, I thought that I was dead. I felt completely empty inside me. I couldn't hear anything. Then, 5 seconds later, I reacted. I started to touch myself. I discovered some blood in my leg, and I decided to run. I went to the other room where some Spanish journalists were, and I said, I cannot hear anything. We have been attacked. And after that, we went stairs down. When we arrived to the 14th floor, where Jose...
15th?
In the 15th floor, there were Reuters people. One of them, Taras, was dead immediately in that attack. But we didn't know that. When I arrived to the 14th floor, an Italian journalist who was a friend of mine was shouting, "Jose is injured. Jose is hurt." And after that, we went to look for him. We saw that he was really injured in one of his legs, here.
In his chest. Jaw and his chest.
And we started to run looking for a hospital. At first, I thought it was an attack coming from Iraqis. And I remember that I met with a guy who was working for Saddam Hussein's regime. We didn't like him at all. That was a dictatorship, and their behavior sometimes was really nasty. And he was saying, American troops have done this. And I looked at him saying, "What the hell you are saying?" And like 1 hour after that, I talked with Spain by phone, and my boss said to me, "The Pentagon has recognized that it was an American attack," and I couldn't believe it, because I knew that they knew that that hotel, as everybody in the world knew, that hotel was the place in which were living 200 journalists from Europe, from America, and they were not far away. And they didn't arrive 10 minutes before the attack. They were there before, 36 hours before. They knew exactly where the Palestine Hotel was. Even from the bridge, you can go to the bridge in Baghdad and you can see Palestine Hotel in English in the building.
And so what happened? You went to try to find a hospital. Did you see Jose carried out?
Yeah. He was saying something about his wife and his children. And, his aspect was not very good. But at first we thought that he was going to resist. I went to the hospital at first, and then I came back because I was not feeling very well. I have lost hearing in my left ear, and I was really dizzy, and I couldn't think, I couldn't stand up. So I came back to the hotel, and somebody told me, "The doctor has said to us that Jose has to be operated, and he is going to lose one of his legs." And I, at that moment, I looked at three Iraqi women. They were sisters of one of our translators in Iraq. They were crying. The day before, they had lost one of their brothers. And I looked at them, and suddenly I realized that I was not a journalist. I was like them in that moment. That I was, suddenly I was in the other part of the scene. Suddenly I was a victim, and Jose was a victim. But at the same time, I felt guilty because my suffer was not so big as theirs, because I knew that sooner or later I could come back to Spain. Even now, with this case, with Jose Couso's case, we always say the same. At least we have the opportunity to ask for justice, to ask for an independent investigation, to say to the world that if this case is not solved, what the message that America is transmitting to the world is, this can happen again. We don't mind about the freedom of information, which is one of the foundations of freedom societies and democratic societies. At least we can ask for justice. We can ask for an independent investigation. We can ask for the protection of the good journalism. But Iraqi people cannot do that because they are still there in the war. And I thought all these things when I looked at this woman. And I thought in Jose without a leg. And I was really sad. I was completely destroyed. And 2 hours later, the doctor said to us that Jose couldn't resist the post-operation. He lost a lot of blood, and he died.
How did the military respond afterwards? Did you talk to them? Did you interview anyone? Did you immediately leave?
Yeah, because a day after the attack, they arrived to the heart of Baghdad, and they came to the hotel. Some of them stayed in the hotel. Some of them were really young. The first time I met an American soldier, I went to him and I said to him, "What's your name? Have you arrived to Baghdad right now?" And he said to me, "Is this the center of Baghdad?" And I said to him, "Yeah." And he said to him, "Do you know how many time more I have to stay in this country? Do you have some news about when the government of United States is going to decide that we can come back home?" He was, he was really young, and I think he was really tired. And we talked with some soldiers more, with a lot of soldiers, and we talked about the attack. Some of them said, "Sorry." Most of them didn't know what happened because they were not part of the same division which was on the bridge. And some of them said, "War is war." George Bush said that when he was asked by a Spanish journalist about the attack against the hotel. He said, "War is war." But I don't agree with that, because we are not primitive societies. We are a part of a civilization, civilized societies, and there are rules, even in wars. There are international laws that protect civilian people and journalists. And those rules have to be respected. It's very important for societies to be able to receive information, free information. Because me, as a journalist, I don't know what I'm going to do if there is another war and my boss says to me, "Go to this war." I don't know what I'm going to do, because I know that even if I am in a place protected by international law, as the Palestine Hotel was, I know that American troops, which means friendly fire, can attack me again, because nothing happened. Nothing has happened. This case is not solved. And this is very important, because we are talking about freedom and information, which is a foundation of democracy.
Olga Rodriguez with the Spanish radio station Cadena Ser survived the U.S. attack on the Palestine Hotel on April 8, 2003. We'll come back to the interview with her, as well as with Javier Couso, whose brother, Jose Couso, died in that attack. We will also play an excerpt of the Telecinco documentary, Javier's brother's Spanish TV network, Telecinco's documentary, Hotel Palestine, Killing the Witness. Stay with us.
Vamos a día a día, ven a ver.
Must by Nusrat Fateh Ali Khan here on Democracy Now!, democracynow.org, The War and Peace Report. I'm Amy Goodman. As we go back to April 8th, 2003, when U.S. forces opened fire on the Palestine Hotel in Iraq, killing two journalists. Moments after the shelling, U.S. Central Command spokesperson Vincent Brooks held a news conference in Qatar.
Initial reports indicate that the coalition force operating near the hotel took fire from the lobby of the hotel and returned fire.
Continue on the point you made there. If you're claiming fire was coming from the lobby of the Palestine Hotel, why was this tank round directed at an upper floor?
There is intermingling that happens, though, on the battlefield, and I don't have enough information to say exactly how the dynamics of the battlefield came together today.
CENTCOM spokesperson Vincent Brooks. Spanish radio journalist Olga Rodriguez was wounded in the attack on the Palestine Hotel. I asked her to respond to Brooks' comments.
When I listened to that explanation, I couldn't believe it. I couldn't believe it, and nobody of the Palestine Hotel could believe. I remember a lot of, I have a good American journalists who were there staying, and we were like astonished. Because the explanation was there were Iraqis shooting from the Palestine Hotel. And because of that, we decided to attack the Palestine Hotel. That was not true. And Washington had to change that first explanation because there were 200 journalists saying that is not true. We didn't hear any shoot coming from the Palestine Hotel, and there were nobody shooting. That was the first explanation, and we didn't accept that explanation. 4 months later, after an investigation made by the American Army, the conclusion of that investigation, in which no journalist is interviewed, no witness who were living in the hotel was interviewed. The conclusion is that someone in a balcony of Palestine Hotel was using binoculars, and was telling through a radio the position of the tanks. And because of that, they decide to shoot, to attack. I don't accept that explanation. And I'm going to tell you why. The tanks were on a bridge that is one of the main bridges of Baghdad. You could see them. They were not hiding. You could see them from anywhere in the center of Baghdad. So I think it was not a threat at all.
The spokesperson for the Pentagon in the United States, Victoria Clark, who went on to now be a CNN consultant, said that Baghdad is not a safe place, that you should not be there. Your response, Olga?
Well, I became a journalist. At first, my parents are journalists. I come from a family of journalists. And I believe in good journalists. And I became a journalist because when I was a child and I was a teenager, there were some journalists who told me things in a way that way in which they told me those things made me think and made me to become more interested in news and in the world and in the others. And I believe in the necessity of the presence of journalists in wars. When I went to cover Iraq war, I knew that I was exposed to a lot of dangers. I knew that I could die walking on the street because suddenly a bomb falls on me. I knew that maybe a fire, crossfire, could harm me, and I could die because of that. I knew, and I was really afraid, that I could be kidnapped by Iraqis when American troops were close to them. And I was, I didn't mind, I mean, I wanted to be there, covering that war. But the only thing that I never imagined was that American troops were going to attack journalists living in a place protected by international law.
You went to Washington as part of to hold a news conference at the National Press Club. Almost no one came. American press came yesterday with Javier Cosso, Jose's brother. The response in Spain to the killings was very different to the response of the press in the United States. Can you talk about the one-day strike, about how people responded in Spain, the journalists?
Well, at the next day of the killing of Jose, my mother phoned me and my boss phoned me to Baghdad, and they told me, this is incredible. The prime minister, José María Aznar, who supported the war, the 90% of Spaniards were against the war, but the government decided to support the war. The prime minister went to the Congress, and when he arrived there, all the journalists, every journalist, put the cameras on the floor, turn and give him at the back. I don't know the expression very well.
Turn their backs.
Mm-hmm. To him. Asking him to ask Bush for an explanation, as Berlusconi, the prime minister, the Italian prime minister, has done now after the attack against Julian Azgrena. There is a huge difference between the behavior of Aznar and the behavior of Berlusconi. Berlusconi immediately asked for an explanation to the American government. Spanish government didn't do that at all. And after that, the family of José Couso decided to organize a strike, to organize a concentration, a demonstration in front of the American embassy in Madrid. I was still in Baghdad. But when I arrived to Spain, I realized that all the society, Spanish society, was really, really, really touched because of this. And the society, the whole society, was asking the government for an explanation and for an independent investigation. Almost 2 years ago now, still, every month, there are a lot of people in front of the American embassy in this demonstration that the family of José Couso organized every month, the 8th of every month. And now the government has, the Spanish government has condemned the attack.
The new government.
The new government.
Zapatero.
Mm-hmm. And has given a medal to the family and has decided to give every correspondence, died correspondence family, economic compensation because of their deaths, because the government has decided, has said that it's really important, the labor, the job of war correspondents.
Would you go back to Iraq?
I don't know. I don't know. Right now, I don't know.
And what do you think of the response right here in the United States as you come here to talk about José Couso's death?
I think I have a very good friend of mine who is a journalist in this country. When the attack happened against the Hotel Palestine, he phoned me. He was in Jordan. And he told me, nothing is going to happen, Olga, because there is no an American journalist between the hurt people or died people or dead people.
Say that again.
He said nothing is going to happen because between the injured people or dead people are not American journalists.
Because there are no right who have died.
And I love this society and this country. I've been living in New York for a while. But I think he he was right in this. Maybe it would be, it would have been different if an American journalist were between the victims of that attack. I hope that never an American journalist is injured or dead. I hope, inshallah, as Arabic people say. But to get that, to protect journalists, societies have to look what is happening to all journalists in the world.
Spanish radio correspondent Olga Rodriguez. She survived the U.S. military's attack on the Palestine Hotel and wrote the book Baghdad, Aquí Baghdad, and it was published in Spain. This is Democracy Now!, democracynow.org. In a few minutes, we'll hear from Javier Cosso, the brother of Jose Cosso, who died in the attack. But first, we turn to the documentary Hotel Palestine, Killing the Witness. It includes interviews with numerous journalists who were inside the Palestine Hotel, the AP reporter embedded with the U.S. forces at the time of the attack, as well as the U.S. tank commander who pulled the trigger. The documentary was produced by Jose Cosso's network in Spain called Telecinco. It was broadcast on Spanish TV. This is an excerpt.
Barely minutes after the attack, and with almost no possibility of having contacted their forces still on the bridge, U.S. officials announced their first version of the incident.
Initial reports indicate that the coalition force operating near the hotel took fire from the lobby of the hotel and returned fire.
Continue on the point you made there. If you're claiming fire was coming from the lobby of the Palestine Hotel, why was this tank round directed at an upper floor?
There is intermingling that happens, though, on the battlefield. And I don't have enough information to say exactly how the dynamics of the battlefield came together today.
David Chaito has been reporting us by telephone during the extraordinary events.
Journalists working at the Palestine Hotel categorically deny this version of events.
They knew exactly that there were journalists here and there were cameras pointing at the tank battle going on from these balconies. And it is extraordinary that they should come up with this excuse saying that we've all got to hang white sheets out of the window to identify ourselves because there were sniper rounds coming out of the building. I never heard a single shot coming from any of the area around me, certainly not from the hotel.
All of us there knew that there had been no hostile fire at all against the American tanks, neither from the hotel nor from the hotel surroundings.
I sat for about 5 hours, positioned on the hotel terrace, and heard no shooting from our side, not from our side, none at all.
There is an obvious fact that contradicts this first version from the U.S. forces. More than 1,500 meters separate the Palestine Hotel and the tanks, far beyond the effective range of a rifle or a rocket-propelled grenade launcher. Associated Press correspondent Chris Tomlinson was embedded with the 2nd Battalion of the 3rd Infantry Division.
I think that was something that soldiers started saying after the fact to try to protect themselves from criticism. But as you pointed out, if you go stand where the tank was and look at where the Palestine is, there's no, an RPG cannot fire that far. A sniper rifle may be able to reach that far.
AP reporter Chris Tomlinson
certainly can't shoot that far.
We visit Fort Stewart in Georgia, headquarters of the 3rd Infantry Division. Our team is interested in seeing an Abrams tank from the inside. The crews are checking the armored tanks that took part in the war. Sergeant Pyle explains in detail the capacities and qualities that make the Abrams a virtually invulnerable weapon of war.
This thing weighs 70 tons and is pretty much from the front especially impenetrable. If somebody shoots at us from the front, it's not coming through. We did have tanks that were, the suspension was hit. We had tanks that the engines were hit, but the crews were not.
The 120-millimeter cannon is not its only weapon. To handle the threat of a sniper hidden in a building, it could or should use a less destructive weapon.
If you were just taking fire from a point, from a single place, we'd use the machine guns and try not to cause any further collateral damage.
These are the sights through which the tank commander and the gunner identify the target. The precise distance is calculated by a laser guide. A target located 1,500 meters away can be clearly identified.
He can identify day or night, out to about the maximum range of the weapon system, at about 2.5 miles.
2.5 miles. And that will be an accurate target for you.
If you can see it, you can hit it.
Sergeant John Gibson commands one of the tanks that on April 8th would take positions on the Al-Umariya Bridge. He would be the one to fire on the Palestine Hotel. His tank carries the flag of Captain Walford's company. One of his soldiers has no problem in showing it, a skull with two crossed swords. On the left, their nickname, the Assassins. Days after the attack, Gibson agrees to talk to a team from Belgian public television.
It was easy to find them, but difficult to convince them. And the argument I used was, if this goes to court and the affair gets complicated, the most probable result is that the chiefs of staff will lay the blame on you.
I was receiving artillery rounds up there in front of my tank, beside my tank, up under my tank. They were shooting up under my tank with RPGs on the bridge. You go over to the bridge right now, you will see holes up under the bridge where my tank was sitting.
And at one point, he stops the interview.
Want to go look at my tank? You see the shots on my tank? Come on, let's take a look at that. Come on.
Wait. And tells me, I'll show you my tank, how we were attacked. He takes me all around the tank and shows me the holes from all kinds of artillery. At that point of the interview, he was almost angry at having to explain the battle on the bridge to me.
Weeks later, on the bridge, we still find evidence of the battle, although not as much as Gibson asserted. The damaged bridge railing, the impact of rocket-propelled grenades. Other traces reveal the tank's decisive response to attack. Enough to make a hole in this lamppost when they fire on the Ministry of Telecommunications. On April 8th, cameras at the Palestine Hotel film how one of the tanks located behind the bridge is hit. But above all, they see the armored tanks reply to fire with their full power, again and again, and always straight at this building, the Ministry of Youth. That is where the Fedayeen have taken up positions. From a nearby building, an old janitor soon watches them flee.
They all ran away. There was no one left. The ministry was empty. But before that, there was major resistance.
From the Palestine Hotel, journalists can see the bridge, but not the areas from which the tanks are fired upon. The U.S. troops fire continuously on the other side of the river. They are being attacked from an area to the left of the bridge and from the Ministry of Youth, 1,500 meters away from the hotel. If, according to the official explanation, they were being attacked from the Palestine Hotel, why did they only fire a single round in that direction throughout the entire morning? At this point, the official version evolves to include the spotter theory.
It was at that point that Captain Walford's men had captured an Iraqi prisoner who had a radio. They were monitoring, they had an Arab linguist, an Arab American, listening to the radio, listening to what they call a forward observer, someone calling in the mortar fire and directing the infantrymen in their attack against Captain Walford's forces.
Then I went to scan higher. I started going by the floors. I seen no one until I get to the upper third floor. I see somebody up there with a pair of big binoculars, and I see them pointing.
All war correspondents carry binoculars for just that kind of thing, to spot a tank 2 kilometers away and to tell the cameraman that there's a tank over there.
It was simply ridiculous that they should think that tank position coordinates were actually being given from the hotel. You could see the tanks from just about anywhere in the city.
Did Gibson see a journalist with binoculars and think he was an enemy spotter? It could be an excuse, but surprisingly, the sergeant goes on to assert that there were no journalists on the balconies.
We didn't see it was a camera?
There was no camera. I seen binoculars.
A camera on the balconies. Binoculars?
This one? Negative. A person will stand like this with 2 hands in front of their eyes with just a camera, okay? I seen 2 lenses with their hands up holding it. It looked like binoculars to me.
Tank Commander Sean Gibson from the documentary Hotel Palestine, Killing the Witness. We'll continue with it in a minute. This is Democracy Now!, democracynow.org, The War and Peace Report. I'm Amy Goodman as we continue with Telecinco Network's Hotel Palestine, Killing the Witness. This is journalist Carlos Hernandez from the Spanish network Antena 3.
The shell hit room 1503, the Reuters room, and all the rooms above, below, to the right and to the left were occupied by colleagues, journalists whom we knew personally.
Boston Herald correspondent Jules Crittenden, embedded in the tank company, maintains that the main fighting lasted 6 hours, from 4 a.m. to 10 a.m. That is, the combat ended 2 hours before the attack on the Palestine Hotel. Jose Coso's last tape is 24 minutes long and begins with this footage. During the first 9 minutes, his camera films the tanks firing 18 times. And finally, in the last 15 minutes, they fire once. Just once.
When I sat down with Taras, it was quiet. There was no tension in the air. There was probably less tension in the air then, less tension, less worry, than there had been in the previous days when the bombing was going on.
At that point, we were relatively calm. We'd already filmed everything there was to film. The tanks had stopped. There was no fighting. And for some time, we'd heard no shots being fired.
Gibson swings his cannon toward the hotel and requests Captain Walford's permission to fire, but he still hesitates.
And I still hesitated. You hear me? I hesitated. Okay? And I took my time and I called it up to ensure what I seen. And it was clarified with another set of eyes.
The decision was not taken in the heat of battle. 10 minutes go by until Gibson receives the order to open fire.
Une violente déflagration ébranle l'hôtel. We did not know that they had reporters in the Palestine Hotel. If we would have known that, we would not have fired around over there. I don't even know if that information was given to the U.S. Army. I do not know that, okay? If it was, it didn't get down to my level.
What Colonel Perkins and Colonel DeCamp have told me is that they did not have any information about the Palestine Hotel or the location of Western journalists prior to coming into Baghdad on April 7th.
When Colin Powell visits Spain on May 2nd, he confirms what everyone had assumed. The military command was perfectly aware that the journalists were based at the Palestine Hotel.
We knew about the hotel. We knew that it was a hotel where journalists were located and others. And it is for that reason it was not attacked during any phase of the aerial campaign.
The generals monitoring the fighting from their headquarters in Qatar soon watched the incident broadcast worldwide on television and call Baghdad demanding an explanation.
That image had gone out on satellite television, and their senior commanders at the 2- and 3-star general level messaged them and said, "What are you doing shooting the Palestine Hotel?"
Tomlinson overhears radio communications discussing the incident. Lieutenant Colonel DeCamp is informed of the attack by his superiors and shouts over the radio,
"Who just shot the Palestinian hotel?"
Tomlinson hears how DeCamp, clearly upset, asks Walford,
"Did you just shoot the Palestinian hotel?"
The question, and the way he asked the question was a little misleading. When he asked Captain Walford, "Did you shoot the Palestine hotel?" he assumed knowledge that Captain Walford didn't have.
"I wish it would have never happened, but it has happened. And I prayed about it and asked God for his forgiveness. And my sincere apologies and grievances to their families. It was not done intentionally."
There was the sense throughout the chain of command, from Perkins to DeCamp to Walford, all the way down to Sergeant Gibson, that they had done something very bad. That they, I can tell you that Captain Walford was visibly upset when I saw him 2 hours later. He was very upset about it. Sergeant Gibson is very upset about it. Colonel DeCamp obviously was very angry. He was upset.
Spanish journalists are not as understanding as Tomlinson about the military officer's behavior. The three attacks on journalists on April 8th lead them to think that U.S. forces did not want witnesses.
What's my opinion? My opinion is that there was a deliberate intent to fire on the journalist's hotel.
So they had to know perfectly well where we were, and there was no mistake. There could be no mistake.
First, they get rid of the offices of Al Jazeera TV. Half an hour later, they shoot at the offices of Abu Dhabi TV. And half an hour after that, the same tank, why not, shoots at the hotel where other international journalists are staying.
I don't know to what extent the Americans knew that the final stages of the war would be so easy for them.
And what they did not want, under any circumstances, was almost 300 journalists, non-American, and not under their control, that is, who would not exercise patriotic self-censorship, ready to cover whatever might happen.
There were breakdowns at several levels. One, the Pentagon did not inform the chain of command about the Palestine Hotel, its location, and what to look for. And they had assured journalists that they had done that. And that, I think, is probably the biggest error that was made.
Was it a colonel that didn't inform a major, and a major that didn't inform an officer, and an officer that didn't inform a sergeant, who didn't inform the guy who pressed the trigger? No answers.
In Spain, journalists express their anger to the government and denounce that a war crime has been committed. In Congress, they place themselves in front of Prime Minister Aznar's seat with Koso's portrait.
Se abre la sesión.
The Spanish government defines the attack on the hotel as an unfortunate event, a mistake, or a tragedy, but never dares to criticize the U.S. armed forces. The Spanish government uncritically accepts all the explanations given by Washington. President Bush himself is personally forced to address the subject when Spanish Prime Minister Aznar visits the White House. Visibly annoyed, he dispatches the reporter's question with barely 15 words.
President Bush, you have offered your condolences to the families of the two Spanish journalists who died in the Iraq War. I'd like to ask you, do you think that it was a mistake when the U.S. Army fired on the Palestine Hotel where Jose Koso was killed? And if that's the case, will you apologize to the Spanish government and to Koso's family for his death?
I think war is a dangerous place.
That was President Bush, an excerpt from the documentary Hotel Palestine, Killing the Witness. It was produced by Telecinco Spanish Television, the network of Jose Koso, who died on April 8, 2003, when the U.S. military attacked the Palestine Hotel. We turn now to Jose Koso's brother, Javier, in the United States to call for an independent investigation into the death of his brother and the prosecution of those responsible. I asked him to talk about the comments of the tank commander, Sergeant Sean Gibson, on the documentary. Gibson's the U.S. soldier who pulled the trigger that killed Jose Koso. He's translated by James Hollander.
Parece que miente.
I think he's lying.
Miente por... todas las pruebas que tenemos alrededor, ¿no? Las que están en nuestro poder, ¿no?
Because of all the proof, because of all the evidence that we have, that we know of.
Varias grabaciones.
Recordings.
Los testimonios de los cientos de testigos.
The testimony of hundreds of witnesses.
¿Dónde estaban las unidades militares? Si no están seguras, nunca están encima de un puente y al descubierto.
Mm-hmm. Of military experts who make it very clear that if you're exposed to an enemy attack, you would never have a tank on the bridge, you know, just sort of sitting there. You know?
Los 10 minutos que estuvo apuntando.
10 minutes that the main gun of the tank was aiming at the Hotel Palestine.
El proyectil HEAT de alto explosivo que utilizó.
It was a HEAT round from the tank. It was alto
explosivo.
It was a high explosive, a high power explosive used called HEAT, H-E-A-T.
Nosotros hemos tenido acceso al manual de combate urbano del ejército de Estados Unidos.
We've actually been able to gain a copy of the manual of urban combat of the U.S. Army.
Y en este caso, mm-hmm. tenían que pedir información a... las secciones G2 y G3, que es operación e información. Mm-hmm.
They, Yeah, they had to get información, autorización.
Información.
They had to ask for information from the G2, which is the operations section, and G3, which is information sections.
Que tenían conocimiento de que el Hotel Palestina era un edificio civil.
And they knew that the Hotel Palestine was a civilian building.
Y la autorización la dio directamente el general jefe de la división, se llama Bluford Blow, que sabía también que el Hotel Palestina era un edificio civil.
And they received authorization from the head of the 3rd Infantry Division, General Bluford Blunt, who also knew that the Hotel Palestine was a civilian target. The Hotel Palestine had all these journalists.
So you're calling for the prosecution of those in the military?
Así que estamos llamando a perseguir penalmente a los
who?
Culpables.
Of who?
¿Quiénes?
Pues desde el general de división,
the general of the 3rd Infantry Division, Bluford Blunt.
Philip Walford, creo que es capitán, ¿no?
Philip Walford, Captain Philip Walford.
Teniente coronel Philip de Camp.
Lieutenant Colonel Philip de Camp.
Y Saul Gibson, el sargento.
And Sergeant Sean Gibson.
En el ejército, las órdenes que van contra los civiles o contra los periodistas pueden ser desobedecidas según el código de justicia militar.
According to the code of military justice, orders to attack civilians or journalists are civilians, can be disobeyed.
El general jefe de la división o es un loco o es un criminal de guerra.
The head of the division, the 3rd Infantry Division, is either madman or he's simply a criminal, war criminal.
And what has the Spanish government responded to this demand? What has the U.S. government responded?
¿Cuál ha sido la respuesta del gobierno español por una parte y del gobierno de Estados Unidos?
Pues como decía Olga, pues la situación, sobre todo por la sociedad y por nuestra movilización, ha cambiado, ¿no? La actitud.
Mm-hmm. The attitude, as Olga said before, because of the mobilization that we've had, the movement that we've had, the attitude has changed.
Yeah. Nuestra petición al gobierno de España era lo que hizo el gobierno de Ucrania en dos días con Taras Próximo, ¿no?
What we asked the Spanish government to do was exactly what the Ukrainian government had done in the case of Taras Protsiuk, who was a Reuters journalist who was killed.
Nosotros tuvimos que esperar 22 meses.
We had to wait 22 months
para que se reconociera a mi hermano la dignidad como trabajador.
So that they would recognize the dignity of my brother as a worker, as a media worker.
A nivel diplomático se ha pedido explicaciones de ministro a ministro. Mm-hmm.
At a diplomatic level, there was a request for explanations between minister to minister, say from the foreign minister, Spanish foreign minister, to Secretary of State Colin Powell at the time.
Pero Powell, que era en el momento Powell, se ha remitido al informe del CEPCOM. Mm-hmm. Ese que era defensa propia, ¿no?
Right, but Powell, all he did was simply pass along the buck to the report that had been made by the internal army report.
Pero hace dos semanas elevamos el nivel de nuestras exigencias acudiendo al Parlamento Europeo.
In the last few weeks, we've raised the bar of our demands. We've gone to the European Parliament.
Nos entrevistamos con todos los grupos políticos, desde la derecha hasta la izquierda.
We met with all the political groups present in the Parliament, from right to left, every single one.
Nos recibieron el presidente y el vicepresidente del Parlamento Europeo.
We were received by both the president and the vice president of the European Parliament.
Y una declaración institucional del presidente del Parlamento Europeo apoyando nuestra búsqueda de justicia, ¿no?
And they issued an institutional statement supporting our struggle for justice.
El 13 de abril se va a debatir en el Parlamento Europeo.
On the 13th of April, they're going to debate this in the European Parliament.
La diferencia entre el caso de Juliana y el caso de José. ¿Por qué en Juliana hay una investigación mixta y en el caso de José Couso no lo hay? Es un paso importante. ¿No?
Really, with a focus on the difference between the case of Juliana Segrena, the Italian journalist who was attacked a few weeks ago, and the case of the attack on the Hotel Palestine and José Couso. Why is there going to be a serious investigation, apparently, into the attack on the Italian journalist, but not into the Hotel Palestine?
Y dentro del hotel, En el Parlamento Europeo estamos trabajando una declaración institucional de la Comisión de Derechos Humanos para pedir explicaciones a Estados Unidos
We're working with the Human Rights Commission of the European Parliament on a resolution that would demand explanations from the government of the United States.
Pero en el cual incluya toda la protección a periodistas, tanto periodistas asesinados que no estén investigados, sean europeos o no, como periodistas secuestrados, ¿no? Como el caso de
which would deal with all kinds of attacks on journalists, not only the attacks like the Hotel Palestine or the one on Juliana Sabrina, but also journalists who've been kidnapped.
Porque mi percepción, tanto cuando estuve en Irak como desde fuera,
because my impression, both having been in Iraq and also outside Iraq,
es que el periodismo independiente está en peligro, está en el punto de mira. ¿No?
Is that independent journalism is under threat?
Más de 40 periodistas han sido asesinados en Irak sin ninguna investigación.
That there have been more than 40 journalists who have been killed in Iraq without any investigation.
Están siendo secuestrados por oscuras tramas y con unos perfiles que dan bastante que pensar.
They're being kidnapped by dark forces whose whereabouts and that character we don't know.
Y si esto no lo paramos entre todos, mi familia, los compañeros, políticos, cadenas de televisión.
If we don't stop this, between all of us, with all of us, that is families, journalists, media organizations, then
la única información que recibiremos de la guerra será de los periodistas empotrados o de los periodistas militares, y eso no es investigación independiente.
Right. Then the only information we'll receive about war will be from embedded journalists or from the military itself.
Javier Cosso, the brother of José Cosso, who died on April 8, 2003, when the U.S. military attacked the Palestine Hotel. Since the beginning of the invasion, over 36 journalists have been killed in Iraq. It remains one of the deadliest conflicts for journalists in recent history. Tonight, Javier Cosso will be screening the full documentary, Hotel Palestine, Killing the Witness, here in New York, at the Unitarian Church of All Souls on Lexington and 79th. He will also be joining us for our Unembed the Media tour that we kick off next week on Tuesday, Thursday, and Friday when we're in Houston, Los Angeles, and San Francisco. On Monday, we kick off the Unembed the Media tour here in New York at the Ethical Culture Society. Will be joined by Phil Donahue, who was forced out of MSNBC just before the invasion for airing anti-war voices. We'll also be joined by Camilo Mejia, who is the U.S. soldier, the first war resistor to be imprisoned for resisting the war, to be court-martialed for that. He just came out of prison. Juan Gonzalez will also be there, and Jeremy Scahill of Democracy Now! And Bernard White of WBAI will be hosting the event. For tickets to that event, you can call us here at 212-431-9090. That's 212-431-9090. You can also go to our website at democracynow.org, and that's at the New York Ethical Culture Society Monday. On Tuesday, we'll be in Houston at the River Oaks Theater with a benefit for KPFT. On Wednesday in Washington at All Souls Church, celebrating WPFW. Thursday, Los Angeles at the Emmanuel Presbyterian Church with KPFK. On Friday in San Francisco at the Palace of Fine Arts Theater with Javier Cosso. We'll also give you information at our website, democracynow.org. Democracy Now! Is produced by Mike Burke, Sharif Abdelkadous, John Hamilton, Anna Nagara, Elizabeth Press, Yoruba Richin, Jeremy Scahill. Mike DeFilippo is our engineer. Again, our website, democracynow.org. I'm Amy Goodman. Thanks for joining us.